Get started here. 1 Samuel chapter 25. We'll,
are we in 6 today?
I think it is. I don't have my book with me. It's literally the one that's on Samuel, the lesson.
Yeah, this is Samuel where he passes away.
Yep.
Is that it?
That's the right one. Just the one verse here, and then it skips all the way back to basically the beginning of the book. So we'll go ahead and read verse number 1. And Samuel died. And that in itself, of course, is very heartbreaking here to, when you've got such a great spiritual leader passing off the scene. But and Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Samuel, like I said, he'd meant a great deal to the nation, and his passing marked the end of an era. He was the last of the judges, essentially the first of the prophets. I know God himself called Abraham a prophet, but when it comes down to it here, you've got Samuel operating both as prophet and the judge, and technically priest as well, but he did not act as king. And he had absolutely done his best to take care of the people. We don't get into it with this lesson, but of course he was so busy doing his best for the sake of the nation, he did kind of neglect the home life. So his kids weren't all that great, and it was the fact that his kids were not all that great that led the people to saying, "Hey, we want a king. You're getting old. We know we're going to have to replace you eventually. Just give us a king, and we'll call it a day." So I'm sure as far as his personal feelings about Saul and all that we're going to end up seeing throughout the course of this lesson here, is tied back to that there's some regret on Samuel's part that had he done a better job raising his boys, had he done a better job of making them godly men, they wouldn't have gone out there and behaved so badly that the rest of the nation said, you know what, forget this, just give us a king already. And so Samuel viewed Saul as being so critical, a means to try to make up for his mistakes.
And I can understand that, but you know what? You can raise your children the best that you can raise them in church, have them in church every Sunday, but that don't mean they're going to go when they're older.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Nope, you're right there.
You know, it is. For instance, Howard has had two children. His son passed away.
Okay.
And he has Teresa. And she's always been in church all her life. Mm-hmm. And Greg was too. But they were different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I know.
I have two granddaughters. I have Rachel and I have Sarah. Sarah is Addie's mother. They don't go to church. They don't bring Addie to church, which they should.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel, she's faithful to go every Sunday. She goes to a Lutheran church. She was raised in a Baptist church. Went into Church of Christ. And then married a Lutheran. So she's in a Lutheran church. But she's in church, on Sunday.
Right.
And she tells her sister that all the time. You should be in church. Tells her mother, you should be in church. You know? So I understand what you're saying about Samuel's not being a good father to his two kids, but I think you can be the best that you can be, and that does not mean that they're going to follow when they get older.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. I know a fellow, he was the head deacon of the church where I was answered to call to preach. Both of his sons became preachers. One's a pastor down in Georgia, church running 700-800 people. The other one's a missionary. The oldest daughter, she's in church. I forget what Church of God or something like that right now. But the youngest, good night in the morning. A polar opposite of everything. Not good at all. He did a great job, but that one, it just didn't take. And you look at my dad, and I'm not trying to bash my own dad here, but just being honest here. My dad, kind of right there in the vein of Samuel. You know, he's focusing in on what he's got to do, but when it came down to it, okay, yeah, I was in church, and people joke about, yeah, I had a drug problem. I was drugged to church here for this. I was drugged to church here for this. Some people, being drugged to church, forced to be in church, and skipping out on everything else, it don't work very well. So once I was old enough to move out, I moved out and ended up spending 10 years away from God. I didn't get that good relationship, so I end up following in the footsteps of Samuel's kids. Now, the difference is God got a hold of me and brought me back. But those two, you know, I think it was two boys of Samuel's. They didn't. They kind of followed after Hophni and Phinehas and just went their own way. Each family scenario is different. I'm just saying, though, as far as Samuel goes here, I really think that for him, Saul was a means to try to make amends for what he'd done wrong. And that's why it just absolutely killed him that Saul went about doing things the way that he did. That's just my personal opinion on it.
Well, then, because Saul was king, because the people wanted him.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a king. They didn't care what kind of king he was. Is that the truth?
It is the truth. And then they came to figure out, hey, Samuel was right. Yeah. We really didn't want this king.
Yeah, right.
Too bad. So sad. It's too late now. But again, like I said, as we'll see throughout the course of this lesson, they got what they asked for. And Samuel's like, why did you ask for it? Because God had so much better for you. And I just really do see it as having killed him. But anyways, getting back here, though, this chapter, as it's opening up, we are at least 2 years away from chapter 31 at this point. David still has to spend 16 months of time living amongst the Philistines. We see that in chapter 27, verse 7. Enough time to justify his request of Nabal that we see play out here in the rest of chapter 25. So that's where we figure there's at least 2 years worth of time here from the beginning of verse number 1 of chapter 25. The sudden passing of Samuel set the stage for a downward trend for David as far as decisions go. And remember, this is the man after God's own heart. But we'll see here in chapter 25, he gets mad at Nabal because Nabal outright slapped him down for daring to think he should get any sort of a blessing whatsoever. I mean, he abused the daylights out of David, and David ends up losing his temper, and he's going to go wipe out every single male in Nabal's house. That's anyone who's family, all of his servants, all of his slaves. Your male, you die. David's going to do this. But that's not something he'd have done earlier. David would have turned the cheek earlier. But now Samuel has passed off the scene. This is like over in 2 Chronicles chapter 26, where you've got King Uzziah. He came the closest to restoring the glory days of the kingdom of David and Solomon, so long as Zechariah the high priest was alive. Once Zechariah the high priest died, then all of a sudden Uzziah started slipping spiritually, and next thing you know, he's walking into the temple and he's going to offer incense on the altar when he ain't got no business doing it because he's king, not priest. And that's when God strikes him down with leprosy. It parallels so closely with this. Now, David, obviously, Abigail ends up stepping up there and, you know, bringing the stuff there. But in a few more chapters, we're going to be over in 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel, and there's going to be David several years down the road and out walking there on the rooftop instead of being out there on the battlefield. There's Bathsheba. Hey! And then what do we see? He kills Uriah. And then a few more years down the line, you know, David starts worrying more and more about his own safety. So he sends Joab out there to number how many people he's got that can draw the sword. Now, a census in Israel was not wrong. God had Moses call for a census. David wasn't taking a census. David was finding out how many soldiers he had in the nation. And that's why God sent that plague there that wiped out so many thousands of people. It was slow, but there was a little bit of a downward trend here for David because Samuel has now passed off the scene. And it ends up being the same thing in our own personal lives here when we get away from godly people. When we get away from being in church, we get away from our Bibles, we get away from some good Bible preaching and teaching. I can do it all by myself at home. Oh, I've got this person I can listen to here on the radio while I'm busy vacuuming and whatnot. And it's a slow downward spiral that pulls us away because we've let something die in our lives. We've left our first love. I believe it was the Ephesian church. Jesus said that you've left your first love.
Well, that's what's happened with our church. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. When the COVID hit, you know, what happened? Everybody left.
A lot of churches went that same route.
It's not just our church. No. A lot of churches. Mm-hmm. They are more comfortable with sitting home, watching it on Skype or whatever you call it, than to be in church. And that's not right. I don't think that's right.
It's the live streaming stuff, that's good if you're a shut-in.
We watch it, but that's not the same as being in God's house.
Right. If you're able to go, you need to be in church. I do a 5 a.m. broadcast on Sunday mornings. They're on my Facebook page. And I make sure to tell everyone every time, whether it's at the beginning, the middle, the end, whenever. This is just supplemental material. If you're able to be in church, be in church. That's where you need to be. This is something you're getting to get yourself ready to go to church today. This is something for you to listen to during the course of your week. This is not, I can kick up my heels and I'll just sit back and I don't need to go to church. So, yeah. Again, it's some little something we've let die.
Yeah, and that's the answers I get when I ask my, you know, my children to come to church. Well, Mom, I pray. I know Jesus. Of course you know Jesus. Even Satan knew Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and they tremble.
Yeah, but you're supposed to serve Jesus. You're supposed to be there, thank Him for what He did on the cross for you. You know. Oh. And then she tells me I'm too preachy, or I'm too, you know.
That's where the Bible talks about heaping fires of coals upon their head.
Yeah,
you got to do it. Jesus said that he didn't come to bring peace. He came with a sword. That he came to divide. So we give them the gospel. We give them the encouragement. That's up to them to make their choices. Now, obviously, we don't want to be super pushy where we end up pushing them away, but we need to let them know.
At this table, should stay at this table. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want my daughter thinking I'm sitting here talking about her. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, hold on. I got to update my Facebook. Martha's talking about her daughter.
But it's true. Your kids, it's hard.
It is.
Hard. I just don't understand. Do they not know that God could come any minute, any second? Yeah. And what when you stand before him, he's going to ask you, what did you do for me while you were here on earth?
A whole lot of Christians are going to be like that one servant. They're going to walk up to Jesus. Here's your talent. I kept it nice and neat in this napkin that I buried. Okay, you're saved. You're getting in by the skin of your teeth, but you've got nothing to show for it. You should have at least put it in the bank where you could have drawn a little bit of interest.
Yeah.
Better to have at least gone outside these four walls and invite someone to church, to tell someone about Jesus, even if they spit in your face, tell you to blank off or anything else, at least you tried. That is more for God than us just saying, all right, I'm going to keep my head down and rush home real quick so no one sees me coming out of the church. And again, goes right back to those first three words, and Samuel died. That is us letting something die in our lives.
We're all going to die.
Yeah.
You know, and it just bothers me that, you know, my family, my friends, some of my friends, you know, they just don't want to hear it.
Yeah. You still tell them anyways. You're doing it in love, you still tell them. All right, let's keep going here real quick. One more note here for the overall. While God raises up new leaders, the impact of the loss of the previous does have long-reaching consequences. Verse number 1, again, and Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Samuel had lived a long life. It's believed that he lived to be about 98 or so. And that's an awful lot of public service, considering how he was probably around the age of 5 when Hannah brought him to the tabernacle and presented him there. So figure 90 plus years of service to the Lord. That just kind of blows your mind. Exactly. Exactly. Think about that. That just blows my mind, just the 90 part. Let alone being able to serve God for 90 years. But that's what he did. And then we see here that the people gathered together and they lamented him. The people truly appreciated Samuel. They didn't appreciate his kids. And they really weren't appreciating Saul at the moment. But they were appreciating Samuel. And even when, take Billy Graham for example here. When he finally did pass away a few years ago. People lamented his passing. Several people said, is he our Methuselah? In the year that Methuselah died was when the flood came. Now, obviously, Jesus didn't come back then. Okay, that's great. We're still here. But the fact of the matter is, people still took note. Billy Graham died. Okay, people took note. Samuel died. There are people all across the globe. They died. And no one pays attention. But here, these people did lament him. Let's see. The nation, Samuel had done a good job when he was leading the government, and their push to be given a king had blown up in their collective faces, like Samuel had promised. Like all the times, we remember much more fondly how things were the further we get from those simpler times. And I'm sure the people were just like, man, oh man, it was so much nicer back when Samuel was here. This king, he raises taxes, he, you know, conscripts our sons to fight for him. Okay, Samuel's family land had its own mausoleum. When it talks about here that he's buried in his house at Ramah, it literally wasn't his little homestead and they pulled up the floorboards and stuck them underneath and put the floorboards back down. This means that he had his own mausoleum, crypt, however you'd like to put it, where he would be able to be buried at. Since land could not be permanently sold off, we see that in Leviticus 25 through 23 through 28. It was easy to bury your loved ones on the property and not have to worry what would become of their bodies. This mausoleum would often, more often than not, be built in a garden on the property if a cave, natural or man-made, wasn't present. And, of course, we know in Luke 23:53 that Jesus' body, after being taken down off the cross, he was buried in Joseph of Arimathea's tomb that he had just had carved out. So it wasn't a naturally occurring cave, but they had the rock that he had carved out for his own burial, and he became a follower of Jesus and was like, you know what? Jesus needs to be buried here instead. Now, obviously, he didn't stay there. Praise God for that. But the fact of the matter is, he had set up a place, and we're told that it was in a garden. So most likely, yeah, this was in Samuel's garden here as well. What he would have had in the garden, don't bother asking me. I don't have a clue. Then moving on with the rest of the verse, and David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. David frequently moved his people around for safety, so the only thing this move had to do with Samuel's death was the timing of itself. It wasn't like David freaked out, oh shoot, he's dead, I gotta beat feet and get out of here. It wasn't David panicking because of Samuel passing. It wasn't him saying, oh, Samuel's dead, God's left the place, we gotta move. No, it was just a matter of his timing, because as we've discussed before, David had to move his people around a lot. You gotta keep them safe. You gotta keep them hidden, because Saul had spies everywhere. This wilderness region here stretched from Sinai through the southern territories of the tribe of Judah by Beersheba. It was a place well situated for grazing. This information was known to everyone, and bandits frequented the area to pick off animals from herds. Moving here would give David's men food for the flocks and something for themselves to do, i.e. protect the flocks in this region, which will end up being dealt with here in the rest of chapter 25. But at this point, of course, the lesson breaks off and has us actually now double all the way back to chapter number 1, which we're going to go ahead and hold off on until next time, as that I see it is rapidly approaching 6:30.
Brother Dennis?
Yes.
I was reading about this, and it said that Samuel died after he learned that his two sons had been killed in the battle. I guess it just overwhelmed him.
Where did the author come up with that at?
I was just reading about it on, you know, when I Googled everything in, was looking at it, and it said that his two sons died in battle. And that after,
see,
I'm
completely unaware of the Bible mentioning the fate of his sons. So that might be some Jewish tradition. Because there's, as I've been studying through here in 1 Samuel, there's a great deal of Jewish tradition that they have pulled for 1 Samuel here.
But I thought I had it on the King James and everything. But I always put the King James when I'm looking something up. So, but
yeah, if you're able to find that article again.
He was very troubled about it because his two boys were killed.
Yeah. If you're able to find that article, let me know, because I know that's what happened with Eli when Hophni and Phinehas were killed in battle.
Okay.
And he
Eli
freaked out, but he didn't.
Eli's sons were Hophni. What did he
Hophni and Phinehas. And it wasn't even that his boys were killed in battle. It was that he heard that the ark was taken, and that's what got
that's
him.
Right.
And it's like,
Eli.
He knew his sons were that bad that it didn't really bother him that they died, but what tore him up was that the ark was taken.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not sure if your priorities are straight
right
or not, but at the same time,
Dennis, you're right. It was Eli's two sons that were killed in battle, not Samuel's.
Okay. But, hey, like I said, there's a lot of Jewish tradition that is woven in here with the book of 1 Samuel. So it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't come up with something like that.
Yeah.
You know, anything is possible. You know, not to pick on the Catholics, but
I love
there's a lot of unnamed people in the Bible. The Catholics can tell you who the name was. I've yet to find out where they get Veronica from, but apparently there was a Veronica there on the Via Della Rosa.
There was Oprah, too, but it was different. Oprah.
Well, that was Orpha, and the nurse misspelled Orpha, and that's how Oprah Winfrey got Oprah, because the nurse
true.
Misspelled it. So,
all right. Yeah, that's true. But I love the story about Hannah, how she prayed for a son.
We're going to see that next time.
Yeah, she gave it up. Yeah, and it's so beautiful. I love it.
All right, well, let's go ahead and dismiss some prayer here.